Welcome to Character Explorations, a podcast production of the Wendt Center for Character Education at the University of Dubuque. I'm Annalee Ward, the director of the Wendt Center, and our guest today is Dr. Mary Emily Briel Duba, assistant professor of theology at the University of Dubuque and the University of Dubuque Theological Seminary. She is the author of the article, Does the Truth Matter? Truth-Telling as Resistance and Hope in a Post-Truth Era. This article is available online at dbq.edu/wentpublications. Welcome, Mary Emily.
Hi.
You wrote this article for the journal issue Character and Transitions. Your title suggests a fight against a transition to this so-called post-truth era. Could you help us understand a little bit about how this is a problem that you're concerned about? Maybe you have an opening example or something like that.
Sure. Well, in my own life, the example I think of first is a time when I deceived my daughter. At the very least, I didn't tell her the whole truth. Here's what happened. She had broken her favorite headband. It was one of those plastic headbands made of a rigid purple plastic, and she flexed it too far and it snapped. She was sobbing and she carried the broken pieces over to the recycling bin and laid them in so tenderly and with all the sincerity of a preschooler trying to be brave. She laid them in and said, "I hope it gets made into a new headband for a new little girl." It soothed her to think of these broken pieces being transformed into something new. And so I let her think that this was possible. But that night after she went to bed, I took the pieces out of the recycling bin and put them in the garbage, because that plastic was not recyclable. It didn't have that familiar recycling triangle on it. It was a small deceit on my part to let her think otherwise, because it comforted her. But of course, this is only the beginning of deceit. When it comes to recycling, we have all been fed a lie. Here's what happened. In the 1980s, the plastics industry faced a crisis of disapproval. Citizens were worried about all of the plastic that was mounting in the landfill, and they encouraged their cities to start passing plastics bans. Of course, the plastics industry didn't like this and wanted essentially to keep selling more plastic. So they spent millions of dollars on a media campaign designed to convince the American public that plastic is a environmentally responsible choice because it can be recycled. In other words, they sold us the promise of recycling in order to sell more plastic.
Well, that is a whole topic for perhaps another conversation, but you use that as an example of this bigger problem of deception. Why do you see deception as significant? Why is it such a problem?
Well, we deceive one another in big ways and small. And whether it's a mother deceiving her child about what's possible, or a multi-billion dollar industry deceiving the public about what's possible, deception is always a violation of trust and a misuse of power. Of course, deceit is nothing new, but in our time, many people are coming to be concerned that deceit is becoming a cultural norm. Political leaders and pundits peddle false realities. Corporations lie to the public about the safety of their products. We have heard a lot lately about conspiracy theories and the ways in which social media amplifies false stories and spreads them really quickly. When we put all of this together, some cultural observers propose that our growing disregard for the truth marks a kind of transition into what has been called a post-truth era.
Well, what do you mean by deceit? And Why is it so attractive to us?
We deceive others anytime we intentionally lead them to believe something that we know to be untrue. Deceit promotes a false sense of reality. So lying is one way to deceive, but not all deception is lying. We can also deceive one another by manipulating or omitting facts, by manufacturing doubt or denial in order to confuse or mislead someone, or by undermining the credibility of someone we know to be speaking the truth. So in the case of my example, I didn't lie to my daughter about the fate of her headband. I didn't say to her, it will become a new headband. But I did deceive her by omitting facts, like choosing not to tell her that her plastic wasn't recyclable, and by encouraging her to hope for something that I knew wasn't possible.
Cicela Bock, in her classic work, Lying, argues that truth is as necessary to life as the air we breathe and the water we drink. What are the dangers of being deceitful, as you understand it?
The dangers of deceit are multiple and overlapping. So deceit generates distrust between people, and it begins to undermine what we might call our shared reality. So shared reality is this technical term, and it basically means a world of experience that we inhabit together and feel similarly about. So for example, when we watch a movie with friends and we all laugh at the same scenes, we're sharing that reality. Or when I reminisce with my sister about our childhood in grandma's backyard playing with our cousins, she and I inhabit those same memories together, and we have access to that shared reality, what it felt like to be at grandma's. When we're in grief, for example, or we go to a support group where everyone who's there shares this common experience of loss or struggle, we take comfort in that shared reality. So there's this desire among human beings to share reality together. One of the problems with deceit is it undermines a shared reality. When I didn't tell my daughter the truth about her headband, I invited her into a fantasy that I do not share. And so I drove a kind of wedge between the worlds that we inhabit. But this can happen both, as I've said, at this small level between mother and daughter, but also in our public life. So when those who are in power deceive the public by misleading or manipulating all of us together, it harms the fabric of society by distorting our sense of a true shared reality. And it matters that our shared reality is true. It's not enough for us to share a deceit together, to inhabit a false world together. Another problem with deceit is that it denies us equal access to facts. This damages our democracy, because how can we choose how to live well together, what choices to make as voters, if we don't have access to the facts of the matter? We'll never be able to address the crises that we face if we don't have access to facts. So in my example about the plastic industry's deceit, if they had told us the truth, that recycling plastic was not, or at least isn't yet, a profitable enterprise, it's not profitable economically or even ecologically viable, we would know that it's not the only solution to the problems that we face. We could have been working together to prevent the tons of plastic that have exploded in our landfills, and instead we've all bought into this ineffective solution. We could have reduced our production of plastics that are the hardest to recycle, but we were denied those opportunities by deceit. So this is true in lots of different ways. When we're denied opportunities to have access to the truth, to share a true reality together, to know the facts, then we're also denying ourselves the opportunity to solve problems well together.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Well, even as you're talking, I think what is emerging is that you are not wallowing in despair, that you are offering us a hopeful way forward. And what is that?
I believe that the way forward and what gives me hope is the practice of truth-telling. I understand truth-telling to be a practice of hope and a kind of faithful resistance to all those powers that would seek to divide us by deceit and misinformation.
You know that that raises the age-old question of what is truth.
Of course, it does. And over 2,000 years ago, Aristotle defined truth-telling this way. He said, truth-telling is to say of what is that it is, and of what is not, that it is not. He's pointing to a sort of correspondence between reality and what we say, that our words should match what reality holds. Well, he was wise, but truth-telling is also about more than words. Truth-telling is also about our actions and our relationships, how we live, what we stand for, what we love. So I would define truth-telling as the practice of living in a way that reflects and responds to reality, even when it's hard, and to faithfully resist the powers that seek to deceive us.
What does truth-telling have to do with peace?
Well, truth-telling, as I understand it, is the ground of peace. It's the, we might say in philosophical terms, the condition for the possibility of peace. When we tell one another the truth, we invite one another into a relationship of trust, even across differences in experience. When we speak honestly and listen to one another with humility and openness, we build trust across differences, not based in identical experiences, but on the basis of neighborly hospitality. Speaking truthfully, we invite one another to inhabit the world of experience that we ourselves trust and inhabit. Deceit, on the other hand, invites someone into a world we know to be false. So for this reason, I think of truth-telling as building trust, which is the prerequisite, the basis for life together in peaceful community.
You said that truth-telling acts as faithful resistance and hope. Are there any examples of this?
Yes, the prophets of the Old Testament are famous for speaking hard truths as an act of faithful resistance and practical hope. In a time in which the inhabitants of Judah had fallen into self-deception, much like ourselves today, prophets like Isaiah called the people back into right relationship with God and one another. They called the people to face reality. While they were busy fasting and offering showy sacrifices to God, they were also bickering among themselves and oppressing their own workers. And so the prophets, like Isaiah, called the people back to their grounding in reality. They said, God brought you out of Egypt and through the wilderness, and God made a true and trustworthy covenant with you. This God is rightly worshiped when we release the bonds of injustice and let the oppressed go free, feed the hungry, and welcome the homeless. In short, the prophets had to tell the people a hard truth, that true worship is practicing integrity and peace. Everything else is a distraction. The prophets also spoke truth to power. Kings of this time would hire prophets essentially to tell them what they wanted to hear. This is the ancient world's version of confirmation bias. But true prophets would tell the hard truths that no one wanted to hear. Isaiah says, "The Lord is about to lay waste the earth and make it desolate. He will twist its surface and scatter its inhabitants." Well, the people didn't want to hear this truth, so the prophets had to warn them. But they also connected the dots from the truth to its consequence. The earth is going to suffer. The world will languish and wither. The earth is currently lying polluted under its inhabitants because you have transgressed the law and broken the covenant. The hard truth, the prophet says, is that our relationship with the earth and with God are part of the same shared reality.
I don't know about you, but I don't feel like a prophet, and I am not given a great deal of hope by speaking hard truths to people who don't want to hear it. But I know that you've taken this work and you've said that there are practices that everyday people can adopt to move us in a direction of hopefulness, to move us to resist deceit. And I would just welcome you to share some ideas with us for giving us practical ways of living out truthful hope.
Absolutely. There are many things that we can do to practice truth-telling in big ways and small. So, for example, one of the things we can do is remove ourselves or rest from the constant barrage of deceit and distraction that is being fed to us. So, for example, take some time this week and go outside without your phone. At least once a day, find a way to immerse yourself in a world that is unmediated by words and images fed to you from elsewhere. Creation itself is our bedrock shared reality. The soils and rivers and trees and rocks and oceans and atmosphere, this is our common ground. So go outside. Immerse yourself in nature. This may not seem like a truth-telling practice, but it grounds us in reality that's not fed to us by people with an agenda. The only agenda in creation is the beauty of God's glory.
It sounds restful right there.
Absolutely. And just resting ourselves from what's being sold to us and fed to us is a way of renewing ourselves for the work of truth-telling ahead.
What other ideas do you have? I know you have more.
I do. So another practice you can do on a regular basis is a practice of self-reflection that allows you to seek the truth about yourself. Perhaps you are someone who needs to hear the truth of your own beauty and dignity in resistance to the harmful untruths that you have received or heard elsewhere. Or perhaps you're a person who needs to speak the hard truth of your own weaknesses, a propensity for self-distraction, or the ways you deceive yourself. So I'd encourage you, in a relationship with a friend or your faith community or even your own journal, to make time on a regular basis to hold yourself accountable to both hard and affirming truths. For me, this is something I do every week in church. I belong to a faith community where every week we confess together the ways that we have fallen short of God's vision of integrity and peace. And then together we receive the deeper, more persistent truth of God's forgiveness and love. Speaking these hard truths and receiving the truth of mercy frees me for the week and the work ahead. Another thing we can do is begin to critically analyze our own media consumption and get out of our own echo chambers. Seek out sources that are different from your own cultural or religious background. On Facebook, try friending or following the local mosque or a local organization supporting immigrants so you can follow the news through other eyes. Whatever you're reading or viewing, I encourage you to use tools of what we might call critical analysis. Ask questions of what you see and read in order to unmask the hidden powers and agendas behind these truth claims. So, for example, when I read something and wonder what is its angle, I ask myself, who benefits from this interpretation of reality? Which empire is bolstered by this claim? And then I also ask the opposite. Who doesn't benefit? Whose testimony is silenced and whose well-being is undermined by this depiction of reality? Another important thing you can begin doing is holding those in power accountable to shared reality. Whether in ballots or direct action, with your money or your pen, insist that our leaders and those wielding great power over our shared reality tell the truth. And you can get inspired for this work by listening to the examples of brave truth tellers, even prophetic voices in our own day. People like Greta Thunberg and Bryan Stevenson, who who in their own areas of passion and expertise work to set the record straight on behalf of justice and truth and ecological flourishing. And finally, just commit to telling the truth to one another in your everyday relationships. This is how we build common ground and trust with one another. Talk to your neighbors. Make friends with people of other faith traditions, languages, cultures, and life experiences. If you have the chance, travel abroad. Powers will always seek to divide and conquer us with distortions, but truth-telling builds trust and friendship.
These are fantastic suggestions, things that we can each do every day, every week, every month to promote a habit, a practice of truth-telling, and to build a world that is more hopeful and is more real and more committed to being together in common ground. As you think about this work that you've been doing, are there any last words you'd like to leave us with? Any last reminders? I don't want to leave without giving you a word.
It's my hope that by living as truth tellers in matters both big and small, we can walk together into a new shared reality built on the firm foundation of trust and humanity and justice and peace. But until that day, until that vision comes true, I encourage us to let truth-telling be our act of faithful resistance against all that would deceive and divide us. Let truth-telling be our act of hope for the world.
Mary Emily, thank you so much for reminding us of the hope that we can harness through truth-telling to counter any transitions, any movement toward a post-truth era. These practices are not easy, but they retain their own kind of power to engage this world with love and depth of vision. For all of you, our guest today has been Dr. Mary Emily Briel Duba, Assistant Professor of Theology, and I'm Annalee Ward for Character Explorations from the Wendt Center for Character Education at the University of Dubuque.